The Baal Shem Tov once sent one of his younger disciples, Rav Moshe Meshel, to one of his great and most scholarly disciples, Rav Chaim Rappaport, with the following mission. The Baal Shem Tov told Rav Moshe Meshel that he should tell Rav Chaim Rappaport that on a specific day he should travel outside of the city into the wilderness. The Baal Shem Tov told him to travel about 80 vyorst, which is a measure in Poland and Russia, east of the city of Lvov, where Rav Chaim was the rabbi, and there he should learn the first four chapters of the Rambam, the Laws of Blessings, with great depth. And those novel insights that he would come up with, he should write down at that time. On that day, the Baal Shem Tov continued, Rav Chaim should daven early, eat breakfast, and go on his way, and nothing should stand in the way of fulfilling this mission. When he comes to the forest, and there he sees before him the visage of the Baal Shem Tov, then he will know that this is the place where he is supposed to stop, and that is the place where he should be studying those laws of brachas, those laws of blessings in the Rambam. Following his learning, he should daven mincha and then return in a good time to his home. The Baal Shem Tov also said to Rav Moshe Meshel that coming to the city of Lvov, he should give over a letter from the Baal Shem Tov to Rav Yechiel, a person who lived there, and once he gives him the letter, he should have nothing else to do with him, just give him the letter and that's it, and nobody should know about this task. The Baal Shem Tov also told Rav Moshe Meshel that the evening before Rav Chaim is to go on his journey, he should see to it that Rav Chaim will wake up in time and that he not be late to his appointed task, that which the Baal Shem Tov told him to do about his journey to the forest. And although Rav Chaim would anyway get up for Tikkun Chatzos, for the midnight prayers, nevertheless, the Baal Shem Tov said, because it is quite possible that Rav Chaim would be very, very tired from his service of that previous day, it is possible that he would be sleeping late, and therefore he should see to it that Chaim gets up on time and he does his shacharis prayers, his morning prayers, as early as possible. Not only should he see to it, said the Baal Shem Tov, that Rav Chaim wakes up early, but also that he eat his breakfast beforehand. And since it's possible that the goyim Rav Chaim would become thirsty along the way, while he is there in the forest, he should take with him a goblet, so that if he becomes thirsty, he should be able to have with what to take a drink of water. The reason why the Baal Shem Tov sent Rav Chaim on that place was to finalize the rectification of a scholar, a tremendous scholar who had lived some time back, who was known for his scholarship, but nevertheless, this scholar had scoffed at those hidden sages that spread at that time and made known the inner aspect of Torah, and he made light of them. As a result of this conduct, this individual's son became totally irreligious, and although he was a scholarly individual, he would learn Torah without even wearing a head covering and would record his novella in that which he studied, even on Shabbos, heaven forfend, and in general conducted himself in a totally irreligious manner. When a cousin of this individual, who found out about his behavior, and this cousin was a disciple of one of the Kabbalists and the hidden sages, found out about the conduct of his relative, he went over to his relative and he asked him what he can do in order to rectify the situation and bring him back to a religious state. This man's teacher told him what he should do, how he should travel to Rav Moshe, as the man was known, the one who became irreligious, and that which he should do over there in order to bring about a turn of affairs in this Reb Moshe's life. He went there and he fulfilled his mission, and Reb Moshe indeed did become a penitent and he changed his way. Nevertheless, 130 years had passed since that time, and the soul of Reb Moshe still had not received its final purification and rectification. And so the Baal Shem Tov sent Reb Chaim to learn the laws of blessings in that place, because this individual, Reb Moshe, before he became totally irreligious, was known for his total laxness when it came to those aspects of making blessing. The conclusion of the story with Reb Chaim, which is quite lengthy, will not be related now, but now we will speak and relate that story which had to do with Reb Chaim Yisrael, the pottery maker, and that mission which Reb Moshe Meschel was sent to him. Reb Moshe Meschel related that Thursday morning he came to Lvov, and coming into the place where Reb Chaim would adjudicate his the lawsuits and the like, there were many people there, and Reb Chaim was busy with a very important meeting. Attending the meeting were the most important members of that community. When I turned, says Reb Moshe Meschel, to one of the other judges and asked that I be able to speak to Reb Chaim, he looked at me with astonishment. "Don't you know," he said, "about the terrible decree which was made by the Archbishop Mikolsky, who has decreed that within a week from now that the prayer of Aleinu, the concluding prayer of all three services, Shacharis, Mincha, and Ma'ariv, should cease to be recited by all the Jews there. And not only should the Aleinu not be recited according to this decree, but it should even be torn out of all the prayer books. And right now, Reb Chaim and all the worthies of the community are sitting and trying to figure out a way how this decree can become nullified." Reb Moshe Meschel said that, seeing that he would not be able to see Reb Chaim on that day, he went to perform the second shlichus, the second task that was given to him by the Baal Shem Tov, to give over the letter of the Baal Shem Tov to Reb Chaim Yisrael, the pot maker. "Having done this," continued Reb Moshe, "I then went back to the court to see whether I could get to see Reb Chaim, but he had already left to his house. So I went to his home, and there I gave him over the letter that the Baal Shem Tov had sent to him. As soon as Reb Chaim noticed the envelope from the Baal Shem Tov, he stood up with great respect, and hearing that I, Reb Moshe, was sent from the Baal Shem Tov to give him this letter, he read the letter with a gesture of respect and awe, and having concluded the letter, he let out a deep sigh and said that the entire community of Lvov is in need of great mercy because of the decree with regard to the nullification, God forbid, of saying the prayer of Aleinu. Reb Chaim told no one about the letter from the Baal Shem Tov. However, those people who were in his household, as well as his disciples from the yeshiva, seeing that all of a sudden Reb Chaim became enervated and joyous, understood that there probably was a letter to him from the Baal Shem Tov. For such was the conduct of Reb Chaim that whenever he would receive a task or a letter from the Baal Shem Tov, whether something was transmitted orally or by way of a letter, he would make that day a special feast in honor of that occasion. He would also act on that day as a holiday, in that he would not say any tachanun, and he would make the special feast, and that day he would also say special Torah, special learning, in honor of having received a mission from the Baal Shem Tov. Sometimes he would say what the mission was, sometimes he wouldn't say, but always something special would happen on that day. The Goyim said that a Suda, a special feast, be made, and soon it was known to his close people and his disciples that he had said to make a special Seudas mitzvah in honor of the occasion, and as was his wont, he would tell about the Baal Shem Tov, he relate about the path of the Baal Shem Tov during that meal. These people came, as well as many others from the whole city, a large group of people came, all of them who were truly troubled about this horrible decree of the Archbishop. At the time of this feast, it was related, the decision of the meeting, that Aleinu will be recited notwithstanding the decree, and if necessary, to have full self-sacrifice in order to see to it that Aleinu be recited three times a day, just as it was up until that time. And the following Sunday was set aside for a public fest with the sounding of the shofar. Friday morning, Reb Chaim Yisrael, the potmaker who had received his letter from the Baal Shem Tov, went to the Archbishop Mikolsky and warned him in no uncertain terms that if he does not nullify the decree with regard to Aleinu L'Shabeach, the recitation of Aleinu, he will be very harshly punished. Mikolsky screamed at him and threw him out. Sunday, as Mikolsky was going down from the podium within the church, he stumbled and he broke his right hand and foot. His pain was so great that he fainted from the pain, and in that fashion he was carried to his home. As he was arriving in pain, he reminded himself of the visit of this Jew who had come to him on Friday and who had warned him, and he also remembered that he had once seen this Jew once before in the township of Kamenitz, when this same Jew had warned another archbishop that he retract his decree of burning Jewish books. And if he would not listen, he would instantly die. This is what he had warned that other archbishop. When Mikolsky remembered this, he sent the head of the priest to go to the rabbi and to the community leaders and tell them that he is withdrawing his decree of taking out the Aleinu from the Siddur, and that it may be recited just as before. The good news spread immediately throughout Lviv, and the Jews of Lviv were filled with joy and gladness. Emissaries were sent throughout the area to notify all the people within the area that the decree had been nullified, and in the name of the Gaon Reb Chaim, it was said that they should conclude the fast of that day, and when it comes the evening, large candles should be lit like on a holiday in all the synagogues, and that the prayers be recited with the songs of the holidays of Yontif, and when it came to Aleinu L'Shabeach, all recited with the very special tune which was handed down from the Maral Mitrog, that tune which is used during the High Holy Days in the recitation of Aleinu. Reb Chaim, the pot maker, was one of the hidden tzaddikim, one of the hidden righteous individuals. Nobody knew of its comings or its goings. Nobody paid any special attention to him, because judging by his external garb and visage, he was similar to hundreds of other simple, faithful Jews, and there seemed to be nothing special about him at all. This Reb Chaim, however, was a hidden tzaddik, and it was he who went to the other archbishop to warn him that if he did not withdraw his decree about burning the Talmud and other Jewish books, he would have a very bitter and speedy end. He had also told that archbishop that if he did not sees that decree that the Jews have to give money in order that the Gentiles be able to rebuild and refurbish their church, he should know that he would die very quickly. And this Archbishop Mikolsky was there at that time when the warning was given. Mikolsky was told by the other archbishop that he tell this man, this Jew, that he laughs and scoffs from him and his warning, and from the person that sent the warning as well. Dombrowski then had told the head of the priests, the chief of the priests, that they make a public place within the square, that they gather over there as quickly as possible all the Jewish books, and they prepare for a public burning of the holy books, and to send emissaries to all the people, the Gentiles and the surrounding areas, to let them know that there's going to be a public burning of the books of those individuals, the Jews, who hate their religion, and that these should come in masses to celebrate the burning of the law and the scripture and the knowledge of those people who are hated by their religion. And if by that Tuesday the Jews don't give that sum of money which was demanded to rebuild their church, then all the Gentiles should mass upon the Jews for a pogrom, to rob them, to pillage and to plunder, and to rob all that which was found in Jewish homes and businesses. Dombrowski's decree was immediately listened to, and tens of people went to Jewish homes and synagogues to begin assembling and taking the books for the public burning. A great many other people went at that time to prepare this public place in the square, and special stands were made for seeing this public burning. Also, many, many people went out to the surrounding area to let the Gentiles know that they are to come on that day to witness and take part of this burning of the Jewish holy books, and to plunder the wealth and the possessions of the Jewish people. The Jewish people in the city of Kamenitz were terribly, terribly afraid, established fast days, and sought God's mercy and divine benevolence that he saved them from this terrible, terrible time and decree. Within 2 days, thousands of Gentiles, old and young, came to the city to see how the Jewish books will be burnt and to rob the Jews' possessions. Tuesday morning, the church bells rang throughout the area, and the place was prepared for the public burning of the Jewish books. Dombrowski left the church leading the whole procession on the way to the place where they were supposed to do the public burning, but having gone but half the distance, all of a sudden he was stricken with a stroke and he died on the spot. A terrible tumult ensued by the people who were part of his procession, and they began speaking among themselves that the God of the Jews prevented the burning of his Torah. This Rav Chaim Yisroel was the same messenger and emissary who had gone to Dombrowski, and then he was the same one that went to Mikulski, and as related, the decree was totally nullified. The following is a story about the Alter Rebbe, and in it there also is a tale with regard to the Maggid of Mizrich, his Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe once returned from a meeting of the Holy Assembly, his friends, the disciples of the Maggid, where they had gathered with regard to spreading the Torah of Chassidus, the Torah of the Maggid. The Alter Rebbe returned on the first night of Hanukkah, notwithstanding the rigors of the journey. He said Torah on that night of Hanukkah, as well as twice he said Torah during the following Shabbos. Saturday night, a Malava Malki was made, and which was something unusual that the Alter Rebbe should attend one of these Malava Malki feasts. The Rebbe said then Torah, and everybody was in a state of great joy. Suddenly something happened which shook everybody there to their core. At that time, the Jews who lived in Poland were living in a fine manner. Lojna, where the Alter Rebbe was at that time, belonged to Poland, and the Jews were living in a pleasant manner at that time in Poland. Jews were able to make a good living, and the Polish populace lived with affection and friendship with the Jewish people of their area, especially in the villages and hamlets where the Jews lived at that time. those villagers and inhabitants who were non-Jews had a great deal of respect for the Jews who lived in their communities. Even the priests would speak before the populace about the fine qualities, both intellectual as well as emotional, that the Jewish people possessed, their sense of mercy, their hospitality, and various other qualities that they would say should be learned from the Jewish populace. From this sense of closeness between the Jews and non-Jews, it happened not once that there were non-Jews who had wanted to become Jews, convert to Judaism, except because of the many stringencies that were told to them about the difficulty of becoming Jewish, they did not do so in actuality. Especially so, since the rabbis to whom they would come to seek to convert would dissuade them from this, and so it would not come into actuality that these should convert to Judaism. It would also happen, true, very, very seldom, but it did happen, God forbid, that a son or a Jewish girl would have a closeness to a non-Jew, and in such a situation, the priests would do their utmost to see to it that that boy or Jewish girl should convert to their religion. Several miles from Lozhna, on the road to Vitebsk, there lived a widow with her three children, two daughters and one son. The boy learned out of town, while the daughters helped their mother in the household and earning a livelihood. The older daughter married a fine, scholarly, and God-fearing individual who sat and learned. In the widow's home, there were constantly non-Jews who would buy drinks there, and among them was the priest of the community. This priest enjoyed spending time with this young man, debating with him various areas of religion. And over a period of time, it ended up that every day, for several hours a day, this young man would have debates with the priest, and always this young man would emerge victorious in the debates, and the priest would highly praise this young man that he is truly a sterling and remarkable individual. This young man, although he was a scholarly individual and God-fearing, nevertheless, he was also very haughty and very egotistical. Every little thing which would bring praise to him would bring him an additional degree of ego. And after each time that he would emerge victorious in his debate with that priest, he would feel himself dearer and more precious and more self-important than before. On a number of occasions, scholarly individuals passed through the community and they noticed the debates that were ongoing between this young man and the priest, and they told him to refrain from it, but he totally ignored these warnings and exhortations, and he continued his ongoing debates with the priest. The priest began to bring two of his friends from other villages, and they would sit around and speak with this young man and speak matters of religion and debate and so on. And they would all praise this young man that he's truly a great individual, and they told the people in that village that they should honor this young man very greatly because he's truly a great person. This priest told the young man that he spoke with the head of the priests, and he told the head of the priests what type of great individual this young man is. The chief priest was very, very moved by that and impressed, and he said that he would like to see this young man, and so if the young man would like to go to the residence of the chief priest, and if he will be able to be victorious and vanquish the chief priest, the head priest, then he will truly receive much, much honor. At first, the young man didn't want to hear about it. He totally rejected this concept. But after the priest and his two fellow priests spoke to him several more times about it, there was born within the young man a desire to travel to Vitebsk to meet with this chief priest. In the course of his stay in Vitebsk as the chief priest, and he was constantly praised and praised, he was finally told by this chief priest that if he would change his religion and become one of them, he would receive much, much honor. The young man then returned to his village. Several weeks passed, and a number of great scholars happened to pass by this village. Since it was very, very hot and difficult to travel, they stopped in at this inn of the widow, and they stayed for a while, and they spoke among themselves in learning. The young man heard how they were speaking and learning, and he decided to mix in and give some of his own ideas with regard to what they were speaking about. Although he knew how to learn quite well, nevertheless, this young man's knowledge could in no way compare to the great depth of knowledge possessed by these individuals who were passing by and speaking and learning. The guests sort of scoffed at him, and this had a very detrimental effect upon him, until ultimately he decided that he will take up the chief priest on his suggestion and change, heaven forbid, his religion. He went to the place where the head priest resided, and he wrote a letter to his wife and to the family there that he had this suggestion from the head priest, and right now he happens to be over there. However, the family was not able to read his letter, and they didn't know what he wrote to them. When the boy returned at the end of the week for Shabbos from his yeshiva, and he saw the letter, and he read the letter, he let out a yell, Velvel, this is the name of this young man, is now at the head priest, and he's about, God forbid, to convert. Notwithstanding the bitter cold, the mother and the entire family immediately ran to Lozhna, where the Alter Rebbe was, and they went into the Beis Medrash, into the study hall, and they let out a bitter cry and lament, and they said to Rebbe, Rebbe, please save Velvel from conversion. The Alter Rebbe responded that saying that I cannot do anything myself, however, all I can do is relate the following story. And the Alter Rebbe told the story how once when he was in Mizrich, there was a young man that once wanted to convert for no other reason than because of ego. The father ran to the Maggid of Mizrich and asked him to save his son from conversion. The Maggid said that a minion of the disciples should recite Tehillim the entire night. And came the morning, a young man came in with a sack on his shoulders, and he saw everybody else saying Tillim. And he too began to say Tillim, and this young man, who was the one that was thinking of converting, became a total Baal Tshuva, a total penitent. As soon as the Alter Rebbe concluded his tale, the disciples of the Alter Rebbe understood what it's incumbent upon them to do, and they immediately began reciting Tehillim. And that morning, just like it happened with the Maggid, this Velvel walked in as well, and seeing that everybody was saying Tillim, he also, with great tears and crying, recited Tillim together with them, after which he went to the Alter Rebbe for a private audience for Yechidus, and he became a true Hasidische Jungermann, a true Chassid.